Welcome to 247 Real Talk. I'm your host, Julian Perry. It's a pleasure to be here with you once again. This week, I'm recording on a Wednesday night now. It's Wednesday, June 7th, just about 20 minutes after 8 p.m. This week, I'm going to be talking a bit about a subject that I've dealt with a few times, but it's upcoming again, and that is student loans. So sit back, relax, and I'll be right back with you. Welcome once again to the 247 Real Talk podcast. As I mentioned before, I'm your host, Julian Perry. Glad to be here with you for another week. I hope you had a great week since we last spoke. Before I get into the topic of this episode, which I keep saying short episodes, and I try to keep them shorter and shorter, but they seem to take on a life of their own. It's June 7th, and I just wanted to talk a little bit about what we're experiencing in New York today, especially. There are apparently a lot of wildfires burning in Canada, and those wildfires, the smoke has made its way to blanket all of New York City. Actually, New York State. I don't know how far upstate it goes, but New York City, the five boroughs, Nassau County, Suffolk County, and I'm assuming beyond. It's a weird phenomenon to have, you know, what's like hazy sun out and then overcast. It looks what looks like rain. Not necessarily like rain, but, you know, like rain's coming because it's cloudy. But then when you look at the sky, you realize it's not clouds. There's no delineation of anything. It's this hazy, yellowish, grayish, I don't know what to call it, but that type of cloud, a smoke cloud. And then you go outside, well, not before, even before you go outside, in my building today, I guess because of how buildings vent with the air from, the outside, you start to smell the burning, the smoke, you know, in the building. I'm clearing my throat a bit because I have allergies, and having to go out that today and, you know, walk to my train and be outdoors, even though I had my mask on, I find that, you know, I've got the itchy throat tonight, which is likely a result of that. I also saw the way the sun was in the sky. It's like a bright red sun trying to burn through smoke. It was a really eerie looking sun. I'm hoping that, you know, the wildfires, that the smoke is there's nothing really damaging in there, because it was we were completely blanketed, and I would assume that people with health issues, allergy issues like myself, and health issues will or could experience, you know, effects, you know, after this is over. I think they said it's supposed to be bad, because I just came inside maybe 20 minutes ago, and it was still pretty bad outside. You step out the door, you can smell the smoke, the burning, like burning smoke. And it's supposed to go all the way through. I think the warning's all the way through to tomorrow afternoon. It's amazing how we have these opportunities to do work from home. And, you know, this would have been a prime situation where, to protect the health of people, there should have been an order issued for as many people to work from home as they could, but it wasn't, right? We wonder how much people really think about our health, our well-being, as we go back and forth to our jobs and about our business. Anyway, on to the topic of the evening, or the topic of the episode. So what prompted me to come back to this issue, and I've dealt with this a few times in my podcast, was the debt ceiling, the deal that was signed to raise the debt ceiling that the president signed into law. That deal is probably not law. I don't know if they call it law or into being, so to speak, because it's something that expires. Nevertheless, one of the concessions he had to make was that he could no longer extend the moratorium on student loans. Many people may see that as a small concession, but it's not. Last I checked, we had somewhere around 45 million people with student loans. I know a lot of people have received public service loan forgiveness. You know, there was an open enrollment period where they sort of extended what public service loan forgiveness meant. And a lot of people who have spent a lot of years working in government and, you know, paying parts of their loans or whatever were eligible. And that's a great thing. But there are other fundamental flaws of this whole student loan system that I've spoken about. And I've decided to bring about now because we were in June, but the moratorium ends, I think, August 30th. So September, whether you can afford it or not, if your loans weren't forgiven, if they weren't reduced or whatever, regardless, you're back to paying student loans. Many of you for educations that, or an education, or in some cases multiple, right? Multiple degrees that didn't pan out to be worth the paper it's printed on. I did interview a libertarian gubernatorial candidate of New York. I think he ran in 2018, and he brought up an interesting formula or interesting approach that I've been pushing ever since. And that is to start to hold universities accountable, you know, for the degrees that they issue. So sort of do a, you know, there's so many universities out there, right? They're popping out of the woodwork. Many of them are fraud universities, you know, where they turn out to be garbage. Many of them take the money and they're able to get the, meet the qualifications to get the, to be qualified so their students can get federal student loans. And then they get a degree that's non-competitive. And in many cases, they didn't learn that much. The students didn't learn that much. You know, I remember when I was in college, there are a few professors that everyone liked, and in hindsight, it was not a good thing. Everyone liked them because they used to what they call curve the grade, right? Now, if you're teaching students about a subject and you have to sort of curve the grade because your A student who's getting the highest marks is getting the 60s. So you have to curve the grade so that 60s is now equal to an A. Something is wrong. There are a lot of universities out there, like I said, that are run like businesses, and it is a business. But it's not education first. So the ideology behind the change would be, one of the things would be, universities are required to have placement departments. Make it a responsibility of theirs to create relationships with the business industry, both government and private, because both government and private are looking for good employees. You have people that are retiring every day of the year. There's always a need for some good talent in the public or private sector. And put it in their responsibility with a student, as long as the student keeps up their part of the bargain of a certain GPA, then the university has a responsibility of at least the first time placing that student in a, you know, at least to an interview and keep with them. A headhunter would do type of thing, and keep with them until they are placed. If you find that it is the student's attitude, then you would have mechanisms in there to say, you know, we've put this best effort forward, and you know, this is on the student. But most of the time, I think probably 95% of the time, that's not the case. 95% of the time, it's you get this degree and you get it in this prestigious field, and you're happy because you feel you're going to make a great living, and then you go out into the world. And you face the world. The first part of the world is navigating the labor market to figure out where to go, where the interviews are, how to get into your field, and how to get into the companies that you need to interview with. And the second challenge is, if you are a minority, and whether you like to hear me say it or not, those of you who are realists are okay and comfortable with me talking about systemic racism. Systemic prejudice, a situation where you walk into a company as a person of color, probably maybe the most brilliant person in the room, and you walk out without the job. not because of the quality of your interview, not because of the level of your knowledge and expertise, but because of the color of your skin. So that's one challenge that some people deal with. The other challenge that people deal with is universities don't think they do any market studies. So they're so interested in grabbing money that you have a lot of students coming out into fields that are very heavily saturated. Now, that's not a fault of a university if someone chooses to do, to study a particular field. But there has to be some way to balance the fact that they have to pay back these student loans with the fact that they're showing every effort forward and this is the job I'm getting. If I come out with a degree that costs me $300,000, and maybe I'm hit with one or two or three of those scenarios, and I'm getting the job that's paying me $80,000 a year, how can I pay my student loans? There's some people who've been, I don't want to say lucky, but fortunate enough in the sense that they have parents who they can live with. I mean, there's a whole lot of social dynamic of that, right? Because in many cases, if you put your head down, you really study and you're studying some subjects, when you get out of college, there's a short window before, if you want to start a family and have all the other things in life if that's your desire, then you have you're sort of in that age where you need to be out there to find the right person, to form a relationship, to have a family, to have kids. Living at home with mommy and daddy, that's kind of hard to do. Maybe the dating part is not so much, and maybe it can be depending on the parents you have. But what comes after that? If you don't have that option, if you've been living on your own and you graduate and now you want to move, not necessarily on up, but you want to move up a little bit, right? Maybe you've been living in the really dire circumstance. Maybe you've had roommates living in a less than desirable neighborhood and you want to get your own place. You can't do that because once those student loans kick in and you don't have the job to pay for it, you've got to pay for transportation. Let's think about this for a second. You've got to get up in the morning and have something to eat. And let's be honest, if you want to be healthy, it needs to be something substantial. Depending on your income in that job, part of it is going to health insurance, right? So you got these deductions coming out in trying to get good health insurance. You have to dress appropriately. Some places you have to wear, like I go to work every day in a suit and tie. Our day, Friday is a dress down day. I still have slacks and a shirt and a blazer on, right? So you have to have some level of clothing and you can't have just one. Shoes, things that wear out. You have to have maybe at least two pairs of shoes. Money to travel back and forth to work. Even if you're using, let's say in New York and using public transportation, the MTA keeps giving worse and worse service. And oh boy, I really plan to do an expose on the MTA. I'm going to start recording the what's going on at the train stations with the overcrowding of the train. I think if you listen to my last episode, you heard me talk about the guy who had a heart attack on the train a few days ago, last week sometime, and the overcrowding situation and the mess that it is and the walk that you have to make in the mornings. I'm going to do a whole video of this, maybe put it on the same YouTube channel or one of my other YouTube channels. But the point is, somebody's got to expose the MTA for the greed, for the way they keep taking money and raising fares and giving people not substandard service, horrible service. Today is Wednesday, Monday and Tuesday. After all of this new system and better efficiency, both Monday and today was the first day of the week, Wednesday, that we got a train at 5 something in the morning that wasn't crowded. Because Monday and Tuesday, they announced that the train was short 2 cars. Really? I mean, they get away with everything. Every morning I go to the train station, for the last 5 working days or 7 working days, only one day has the escalator been working at my train station to go up to get the train in the morning. At 5 o'clock in the morning, people, and again, people of all ages, especially the elderly, are trudging up the stairs or even the escalator, they walk up because it's not on. And I don't know if it's not working or simply somebody just doesn't care to come and turn it on in the morning. I don't know. But that's the service we're getting. So anyway, I digress because what's going on with the MTA now is really making me upset. And I think that they know that people are so busy in the struggle of survival that if they simply don't improve service and they leave it long enough, most people just accept it and shrug their shoulders. And, you know, it's more important to get to work than fight the MTA. So they get away with murder. They keep lining their pockets with more and more money. They keep going to the federal government for more and more money. You know, if their bosses and the bosses at the top of the MTA make a lot of money, and the service keeps getting worse. Now they want to raise bus and subway fares as well. So getting back to my student loan issue. So now you've got to find transportation money. I can tell you where I live, it's almost $300 a month in transportation money. And that's not including the subway. If I didn't make the effort as part of my health initiative to walk from my last stop to my job, I'd have to take the subway. And then I'd be paying way more than three. I'd be paying more like $400-something a month in transportation. We've got electricity bills that are going out the roof. We've got electricity bill that, when I looked at the last few bills, if you're paying $300 electricity bill, 140-something of it is electricity you used, and 150-something, almost 160, is delivery charges. Delivery, tax, fees, all sorts of crap in there that has nothing to do with the electricity you use. So you're almost paying, 50% of your bill is fees and 50% is what you use. That can't be right. That can't be fair. But you have no choice. You have to have electricity, right? If you have a vehicle, depending on where you live, you need a vehicle, you've got to pay insurance, which is high in New York, at least. You've got to pay for gas. And if you couldn't buy a new one, you've got to pay for maintenance. If you bought a new one, you've got to pay a car payment or a lease, right? You haven't eaten. You don't have a social life yet. You haven't eaten. You've had breakfast. You haven't had lunch. You haven't had dinner. And you don't have a social life yet. So when you come out and you make $80,000 a year even, and you did a degree that where if they were paying you what you're worth, even at entry level, you should probably be getting 100 and something, but you're not getting it. Then here comes the education man knocking at the door, the student loan man. You need to pay me back. And this is not a private bank. This is the federal government, the same body that we elect that's supposed to be by the people, for the people, to create systems and mechanisms to help us. Student loan people cannot, who owe student loans can't get help because we have a distinctive divide as the rest of this country and everything else, Republicans versus Democrats. Democrats want to, make it easier for student loans. Republicans are saying, you took the money, you have to pay it back. Why did you take the money if you didn't mean to pay it back? I'm saying it that way because there was a specific lawmaker that said that. And I think it was more than one. I'm going to say to them, and I don't know if they hear this podcast, but maybe one day it'll grow enough and you guys are shared enough and it'll reach the audience, the larger audience that is having this conversation so they can hear it. There's always a percentage of anomaly, right? But I would say almost no one goes into $300,000 education debt with the intention of not paying it back. No one takes student loans generally. I mean, I say generally because I've heard of new instances where people need student loans. So they're taking out student loans now. They're taking out the max. They're paying for their education that semester, and then they're taking the balance and they're investing it. And that may be the wisest way of being able to pay your student loans right now, because they're investing it and making money on the federal government's money, so they'll have enough money to pay back the federal government. But that's relatively new, I believe. And so for the most part, no one is taking out student loans and saying, I'm gonna go and get this amazing. Because remember, if you take $300,000 student loans, that is geared towards a certain type of degree, right? The average bachelor's, general bachelor's, or whatever they call it, doesn't cost anywhere near that. So you're going into a field that has a certain expertise. You study, you work hard, you get there, and you can't get the money that you need. You can't. I mean, there are doctors like that, right? Because people who don't pay attention to these things don't understand, for instance, that you have people who graduate in medicine, and then they have to get a residency. And another time I'll do an in-depth podcast on residents in the United States, especially for foreign doctors, because my wife is a foreign doctor. She was the head doctor for family medicine at a clinic where she studied in the Caribbean for 5 years. And the way that worked, and I guess that's a really good segue, so to speak, or not segue, but a very good bit of information to share. She, in the Caribbean, got a scholarship from the government. Now, we're talking about countries in the Caribbean that are in South America. She's actually in South America, that don't have a fraction of the wealth of the United States. And basically, where she was, they sent her to study medicine. Of course, she had to keep up certain grades. She had to pass everything. She had to pass all the boards and go in front of councils, whatever was required. She had to do her residency at their hospital. And the deal was, she got a scholarship. We send you to study. You come back. You work for us with a paid salary for 5 years. So she had to work for 5 years for the government, where they had her as the head of this clinic in a certain region as the head doctor. She did her 5 years, so she paid her debt. So she's free. She doesn't have any student loans where that's concerned. And she comes here all happy and all excited about becoming a doctor here, about continuing. She's already a doctor. It's a long story and not for this episode, but I learned so much in her journey. And she, by the way, she doesn't practice medicine here now. Someone who studies medicine in the United States has a big challenge when they come out, even though we need doctors and we need people in the medical field, to get residency. And you're required to get residency with a hospital. And then, what I found out further is that the whole 100% of residencies that are given, I think it's something that only 8% are given to foreign doctors. But there are many foreign doctors that come here, whether it be through relationships, marriage, whatever the case may be. And the majority of them, as brilliant as many of them are, just like a doctor studied here, they're doing jobs that are completely outside. They might be still doing a job in the medical field, but completely outside of their expertise, the sacrifice they made for so many years in their lives, and in a field where this country and any country in the world can benefit from someone with medical knowledge, right? As a doctor, we need doctors. So, that was just one part of, the education system, because like I said, many of these people come out, they studied, they specialized in something really. I think I heard about someone who specialized in something, and her father was telling me she had like $400,000 in student loans, and she got a job for $80,000. It was I forgot what field she was in. It wasn't a doctor, but I forgot what it was now, but it was something that's not only prestigious, but something that has great demand. It's an in-depth scientific field, and her first job gave her $80,000 a year, and she has $400,000 in student loans. And we need to look at not only the impact on those who have those student loans, whose lives come September of this year will be completely disrupted. We need to look at how many people were hoping for debt forgiveness or something because they've done their all. They're still not earning the income that they need, but they managed it somewhere along the years to buy a home, and now owning their home and paying their mortgage might be in jeopardy. Their whole credit situation may crumble because they may have to stop paying all their creditors to pay their student loan. The vehicle that they need for transportation, they may have to somehow, they will probably default on the car payment or the lease payment. This is going to happen in the millions. These are not fictitious, stories. I mean, this is, if you look enough and research this issue, if not, there are a lot of people who talk about selling their house and moving back in with their parents, husband and wife. So there's something really wrong with the system. And the regret I'm seeing in this whole process is from the beginning of COVID to now, when started with President Trump, when we had a moratorium and then President Biden took it over and extended it, that is time. That was time that could have been used to really have someone pay attention to this and re-engineer it at least to give people a fighting chance. The income debt repayment, the income they call income driven repayment program. Last I checked, and I have to check again to see if anything changed, doesn't take if you pay a mortgage into consideration. Doesn't have you provide the last 12 months of electricity bill to do an average as an allowance. But, you know, transportation, where you work, how you get to work, where you live. The fact of the matter is, whether you had student loans or not, these things must be considered because they're a part of survival. They are part, you living somewhere and having electricity and having heat is a part of survival. You having a home and paying a mortgage, or you living in an apartment and paying a rent, is part of survival. It cannot be treated as if we don't care. Our formula is just based on a general formula or on how much you make. You and I can make $80,000 a year, but my bills can look a lot different from yours, and both of us can have legitimate bills. Housing in New York, I keep from New York because I live here. Housing in New York is so expensive. Then how does an income-driven repayment program that governs federal student loans across the country account for the cost of living, of housing, of having a roof over your head in New York? Or in any other state, Los Angeles, you know, in California, any other place where rents are high? A guy who's living in maybe Ohio who's paying, you know, $800 in rent, and I'm saying it because I had a friend who once lived there. I don't know if this is the same, for a whole house, versus a guy who's in New York who's paying $2,000 for a studio, not even in the greatest neighborhood. How could the same algorithm apply? There was a lost opportunity in the amount of time, I feel. I mean, there were things that were done. Don't get me wrong. Like I said, they revamped certain parts of the public service loan forgiveness. But there's been a lot of people talking about income-driven repayments, and it needs to be revisited. It needs to be dealt with. The universities, as I mentioned early in this podcast, need to be held accountable. If you start holding universities accountable, there are those that have the legitimate universities that have a bank account that will survive, and then there are those that are fly by night trying to make money that will perish. Because to me, it needs to come down to if I am going to university and I take up federal student loans, there needs to be certain requirements on me and the university. And when I fill out that request for student loans, that money needs to be promised to the university as sort of an IOU from the federal government. And upon graduation, when both of us, the university and myself, have satisfied all the criteria, right? Or at least, let me backtrack that. As long as the university has satisfied the criteria. I mean, if I didn't apply myself, that's on me. But then if I didn't apply myself, I shouldn't be allowed to get federal student loans. Think about it. If I'm going to college and I'm pursuing a degree, and I'm required to have a 3.5 GPA, and then there may be a pass and probationary level or whatever. But let's say I'm getting a 2.0 because I'm not applying myself. Then there should be a mechanism that says you can't get any more, you can only get one more semester of federal student loans, and you need to maintain a certain GPA. Otherwise, you're done. Because if I'm not going to apply myself, it shouldn't be on the federal government or university to foot the bill, even in the interim, right? I mean, there may be many reasons why I'm failing. All may not be academic. I may have a situation at home or whatever, but that has its own. We have to have mechanisms to deal with that are social mechanisms and not part of this immediate conversation about student loans. So when the university meets all the criteria, including the placement or whatever, they get their check. And it has to be a rolling thing. So as they're, every students graduate every semester, and they'll keep getting the money coming in from those who graduate, and they'll keep going on. That means that those universities who are not meeting these stringent requirements either have to have students who can afford to pay for themselves and decide, I want to go to this university that's not truly accredited under the new standards, or we won't go. And that university will eventually disappear, right? Because it's providing or it's issuing degrees that are not worth the paper that they're written on. I'm going to deal with this student loan issue several more times because there's a lot more to talk about. And despite my constant effort to keep the episode short, I'm on about 30 minutes now. But I'm saying this because whether you have student loans or not, you need to be part of this conversation. You need to think about others. We need to think about others and the struggles they have, not only in student loans, but everything I talk about on this podcast. And you know, relevant to this conversation, we need to understand how it impacts our fellow brothers and sisters. We need to understand the true dynamic of our world and our country and how it affects people of color. The fact that there's a disproportionate effect. We need to understand how it affects women who make up a good percentage too of the people who are going to be oppressed come September with the student loan burden on their shoulders. I know there's a big fight. I know that we're waiting on the Supreme Court to rule on Biden's, the other part of his student loan debt forgiveness. And even that $10,000 or $20,000 may help a few people, but those who went ahead and indulged, you know, their minds and their time and they got a degree that's, you know, something that really should be earning more, but it's not, and they have those $300,000 student loans, $10,000 or $20,000 really is not going to make much difference in the payments that they're going to have to come up with every month. We keep looking at different topics, and it's the same story over and over again. The system of electing officials by the people who work for the people is failing miserably. We're sitting in a movie theater and watching Republicans and Democrats fight each other on based on their issues, their greed, their dislike, their racism, their prejudice, their hatred. One side doesn't like the other. This congressman doesn't like this senator. We're watching them play out their own soap opera. And it's like we're in a movie theater watching us, but we who are sitting in the seats, in the pews, as the audience, don't matter to them. Once we elected them and they got where they are now, they cease to care about us. They cease to recognize that they are there because of us. I think there's one or two, I think it was a congresswoman or two congresspersons who came up with a bill that they want to get passed as the law that says, you know, I think it had to do at the time with the debt ceiling crisis, that if Congress doesn't do its job, they don't get paid. And that's probably the most logical bill I ever heard of, because if you and I don't go to work and do our job, we don't get paid. We don't get paid to fail. Yet we make sure that Congress is well taken care of and the senators and the whole U.S. government is well taken care of even when they fail. So for all of you who don't have the student loan burden, I want you to still consider yourselves a part of the united conversation for change. And I want you to try to spend a little bit of time researching the issue and helping to join the conversation, helping to make the conversation louder and help me to use it as part of, you know, we have upcoming elections of making the criteria for who we really decide gets to sit in the House of Representatives and the Senate to make decisions about our lives. The minute government sees that people are united for causes and for life challenges and not this political ideology and socioeconomic separation or supremacy, as soon as they recognize that they can lose their jobs and they do because they didn't do the right thing and there's a threat of people not standing for it, as soon as they recognize that when we've cast our vote, it really has value, not just getting them there, but keeping them there, then the attitude towards us will change. Until then, we're fighting a battle that they know we can't win. Because when it's necessary, Congress, the House of Representatives, the Senate, they stand together as one when necessary. and they look at us, the people, 300 million people who can't get it together. We'll talk more about this issue in the upcoming months as we get closer to the deadline. But right now, that's all I'm going to say about student loans. That's all I'm going to say for the podcast this week. I encourage you, please, go to my YouTube channel. It's 247 Real Talk Podcast. Share the episodes. Subscribe. I'm trying to build a platform and an audience so the message can get louder. I'm putting in the work, but I can't do it alone. I need your help. Share it. Encourage your friends and family to share it as well, to listen to the topics, to become engaged, and please hit that subscribe button. It's been a pleasure to be with you once again this week. I wish you a pleasant weekend and a week ahead. And until we chat about our next topic, please do take care of yourselves and each other.